So what happens when a donor comes to you, they want to give you a gift, but they want to have restrictions on how you can use the gift. You should not just immediately accept the gift. And this is another place where you might want a policy called a gift acceptance policy, setting forth some general rules about how to deal with this. But consider, okay, what is the use restriction? Is this going to be burdensome or impractical? Keep in mind that in the good years, when you're looking at things with rose-colored glasses, it might seem like this won't be impractical. But on the more difficult years where you're under stress, that's when that burden is going to seem more obvious. So think about it that way before you decide to accept it. Is the purpose really in line with your organization's charitable purposes and mission? So not just is it a 501c3 purpose, but is it really related to your mission? And if not, you may need to let the donor know. Either they'd like to shift it to something that would actually make sense for you, or you may have to turn them away to go to an organization that is more aligned with what they want to see their gift used for. And I also tend to recommend you try to get some variance power put into the gift agreement. And most savvy charities do this nowadays, especially the large institutions. And the way you can usually get a donor comfortable with some variance in terms of the purpose is to narrow it so it's still within a subset of what the donor would like their gift used for. So the example I've given is, you know, they're giving a gift to the hospital to fund a pediatric cancer center. So you might want to say, okay, but can we build in the power to use it for other pediatric care if the cancer center ever closes? So something that will still leave the donor comfortable, that you're not asking for sort of a blanket variance power. We can go to the next. Now, another thing, you might get a donor who wants to start creating like sort of little mini sub funds with their gift. And just keep in mind, the accounting for that can be really difficult. And it also takes away the flexibility you have from year to year. I worked in fundraising before I was an attorney. And it's really hard when a lot of your gifts are in these restricted funds and you're having a tough year and you need to reallocate things. So try to avoid that if you're working with the charity.
Well, and if I can chime in there, I think it kind of gets to the prior scenario that you walked through, Katie, of finding that balance, you know, ensuring that you're not underfunding the endowment, but also not overfunding it or over restricting it to the point that you've handcuffed yourself and don't have that flexibility that you need, which again, push comes to shove. Now is when we're seeing those sorts of issues trickle up to the top. It doesn't come up in a comfortable, easy year.
That's right. And you know, what happens if you have a donor imposed restriction and now you really need to try to get that removed? Well, the first question is go look at your donor gift agreement. They may have already put provisions in there that dealt with how they'd like to deal with those things, like the variance power I suggested, or just how they want to be notified. So check that first. If there's nothing special in there, you're going to go to the default rules under UPMIFA. Generally, you have to get the donor's kind of permission in writing. If the donor is an individual who's deceased, that can get a little murky. I've tended to recommend you go to sort of their offspring if they had children. It's a little easier when it's an institution that's always going to be there. But that's one. And then if you can't get the donor's consent in writing, you generally have to go to the court and get an order modifying the restriction. They'll typically apply something called cypre, where they try to make the new purpose as close as possible. But you really have to show it was impractical, it's wasteful, or it's now become just, you know, very impractical in light of circumstances the donor would not have anticipated at the time the gift was made. And you have to get attorney general approval. So you have to really make your case to the courts and to the attorney general if you can't get donor approval. There's a special rule for certain smaller, older gifts. If more than 20 years has elapsed and the gift has a value of $25,000 or less, you can remove the restriction upon 60 days notice to the attorney general, but only if you've gotten kind of met and had a founding among the board or the trustees that the restriction is unlawful, impractical, or kind of wasteful. So it's not a just automatic, we met the number of years, we met the value, we can just lift this restriction by giving the notice. The board or trustees need to meet and actually show one of these other factors is present. And I highly recommend you put that in the meeting minutes for sure.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about what I think is probably one of the most applicable pieces, one of the most common analyses that we see, you know, when push comes to shove during these crisis times, right? You know, and I think one thing that I'll add, I was listening to the plenary session right before this, and I think it was Catherine Carl that said, talking about the discussion of sensitive topics and the duty of confidentiality, and that's a really good one to throw out here, that, you know, oftentimes when these sorts of things are being discussed at the institution level or at the endowment fund level, you know, these are big sensitive topics. The fact that an organization has, you know, underfunded for its operational costs and needs to consider dipping into an endowment, borrowing from an endowment, invading principal, what have you, that's a big deal. And so, you know, impressing upon the board or whatever other group we're speaking to the importance of the confidentiality issues there, I think is a really great reminder that she shared. So here, talking about invading principal, you know, again, this kind of harkens back to prior law under MIFA, or UMIFA, excuse me, where we had the bright line rule of not really invading principal, not having the opportunity to spend from a fund that was underwater or had depreciated in some way. Now, of course, we do have that flexibility, generally speaking, or often under MIFA.